America, start listening now!
Hey, Sam.
Hey.
Hey, how was Eurovision?
Oh, God, Eric, I really don't want to get too political about this, but...
Hello, and welcome to 12 Points for America, a Eurovision podcast from America, the country that brought you Cranch. I'm Eric.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Danny, enjoying my favorite ketchup ranch spread.
Yum.
Well, summer's here in America, which is nice.
Winter's here if you're in Australia.
Ah, true.
Crikey. Yes.
Nice to be here in the sun in fabulous Minnesota in the United States. Summer being brought in by Eurovision, an annual occurrence.
It is. It is. It just keeps on happening. Just keeps bubbling up to the surface.
It's the time of the season.
It is.
Really nice.
Ah.
This week, I guess we're going to be focusing on...
Eurovision.
The reason for the season, past Eurovision contest, which was wild.
Oh, yes.
I liked it better than last year.
This was a great year. And Sam, you went to Eurovision.
I did. I got back. I think my time zone brain is finally recalibrated to where I'm actually supposed to be. I've brought some delicious noms from afar to share with you today. We're supping upon some fresh, well, not fresh, but dried dates from the Holy Land.
Those of you listening, take a look. It's
it's dates.
They're dates.
Just imagine dates.
I've already gone through three dates, and that's nothing about my OK
you
Cupid.
Slut.
My OK Cupid career. Yes, exactly.
And brought in some kind enough a friend from Slovenia was kind enough to bring me some local Slovenian hazelnut chocolate that I'm brought back and sharing with you guys.
And it is marvelous. Let me tell you again, if you're listening, take a look at this thing.
This it's big wad of hazelnut.
It's very good.
You know you're jealous.
Sam, this is something that I've never actually asked you explicitly, but it might actually be something. Ooh, an explicit question. But it
we
might also be something.
Put a label on our podcast this week.
Yeah, some adult references.
Bound chicken, wow, wow.
Yes.
Keep your pants on, Danny.
Good. But what is it actually like in the press center at Eurovision? Because I actually haven't seen any photographs or video of actually what it's like in the press center. I assume that those are kind of closely guarded, but
not really.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you can't tell a whole bunch of people in the press, hey, don't talk about press things. I mean, I guess you can, but you'll have a whole bunch of people who will rebel against that.
What's the press center like? Because I always imagine it looks like whatever's going on behind the ABC nightly news anchor's shoulder. It's just people at computers tossing papers.
it's a bit like that. It's weird. It's a cross between that experience and if you've ever gone to a con, like a sci-fi convention or anything like that, like a nerd prom sort of a thing. It's especially if you've been going for a couple of years, you walk into the room and you see a ton of people who you recognize over the years. Like, this is my ninth Eurovision, which is really freaking crazy to say. But I walk in there and there are people who I've known since 2011, and we only see each other for the once a year. And it's, how you doing? We just pick up and start again like nothing's happened. But there's a sense of love for what we do, especially for the people who are there for the full 2 weeks, is oftentimes the quote-unquote serious media, like the people from the national broadcasters or really high-end.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, they don't come until really in the second week when the show is actually on.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of us who are there from week one, or really from day one, you get a lot more of the nerdy fandom that is tempered with a feeling of seriousness of, all right, we have been entrusted with these press passes. We need to honor the room that we're in and do the best job that we can. And at the same time, there's also a small group of people who are really just in there to get their selfies taken with all their singers and get the CDs and try to sell them on eBay, which is, explicitly not allowed, but people do it anyway. And try to get as much swag as you possibly can. I mean, this year they took away, for many years they had something called pigeonholes in the press center, which was every press member was given a little mailbox, basically. And the delegations would put in promotional CDs or candy or chocolate or, USB drives with information about the artist. And this year, in order to tamp down on costs, on, wasted resources, anything like that, they were we're just going to get rid of the pigeonholes. If anybody wants to receive information, they can either, you know, delegations can either hand it out individually, hand it out at press conferences, trying to increase the amount of, you know, e-resources, you know, like, here's the MP3, this is where you can get it. But there was a small group of the fandom that were like, or not fandom, the fan press, which, I mean, you know, people are in there because they love it. Mm-hmm. But there were a bunch of people who were just rolling their eyes, like, oh, this is the end of an era. It's like, you know what? CDs aren't the way to spread your message anymore.
What am I going to do if I can't golf with my Serhat visor?
You know what? Those things are worth it. I mean, but the thing is, like, sometimes there is a little bit of a... It's fun when people do something interesting with their promotional material, like this year, Elliot, so Belgium.
Like the Elliot mug, yes.
Yeah, they gave away little thermal coffee mugs for Wake Up, which I thought was really, really cute. Or there'd be, you know, a shirt from France, or, you know, a folder full of information and a thumb drive for San Marino.
thumb drive from San Marino.
You know, it's
my favorite Suzanne Collins book.
Yes. is there any sort of payola concern with that? Like, if somebody gives away something that's maybe a little bit nicer?
It seems to me, or, like, just because anyone can give out anything, that kind of seems like fair play.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
If a press person...
It's not like they're giving out iPods.
Right. If a press person decides to be swayed by somebody giving out better press swag than another thing, then I don't think they're worth your time as a journalist.
That's true. Well, I suppose, but...
I've never been approached for a bribe, and okay. I work with a website that is considered one of the more, I guess, respected in the field, I guess you could say. I like to think so. I guess hopefully I'm not tooting my own horn, but, you know, I work with ESC Insight, which they don't necessarily do the quick interviews and what are they wearing and things like that. We do a little bit more of the in-depth editorial stuff. So that's escinsight.com, mm-hmm. home of the other Eurovision podcast that you want to listen to. Hi, Ewan.
Now,
what's up, Ewan?
Are you saying that because... Like, is it because Germany didn't give out good swag? Is that why they didn't get any votes?
No, that was because it sucked.
Okay.
Actually, that's unfair. That is unfair to the girls. Vocally, they were on point.
Yeah.
They were to the sisters who were not actually related. But, you know, we're actually going to talk about voting in sort of a follow-up podcast of this, so probably for next week. We're just going to here talk about just our experiences on the ground, what you guys were doing when I was on the other side of the planet, and just some surprises that we kind of came up with,
yeah.
That what we were kind of faced with as the carnage of Eurovision 2019 yeah. rolled on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
but things like Belarus's weirdness and the crazy discrepancies between televoting and jury voting, those are going to be saved until next week, even though there were a lot of surprises in regards to both of those things.
Oh, yeah. You can't really separate one from the other, the mm-hmm. show and the voting, because there are many people who literally tune in just to watch the carnage of the voting.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting. It's so exciting.
It is.
To sort of see that roll in.
Mm.
This is my first time watching the jury vote. And the televote rolling in, because last year I just caught maybe the last 10 announcements live. So this year was my first time being able to really sit and stew and watch it slowly happen.
Right.
This is a thrill. I don't know.
That's nuts.
Eric, you were talking before we started this podcast here about how things were done a couple of years ago. And I actually don't know how it was done, how the announcements were done a couple of years ago. Please explain.
Well, it used to be from basically the mid-70s up until 2016,
okay.
Where every country, whether it was televote only, jury vote only, mix of both, that it would be a single set of votes that was presented from, you know, a country giving no points at all to 1 to 8, then 10 and 12. The numbers 9 and 11 do not exist in the Eurovision mm-hmm. vernacular. So we basically only got one set of numbers per country. Since 2016, they've kind of diversified, I guess you could say. They kind of split up the reveal between the votes that are provided by the national juries, and the televote. So they have equal weight, but they're presented differently. And honestly, it kind of extends the excitement because the jury votes are already tabulated by the time the show starts, because those votes are tabulated from the previous night's jury performance, like basically one of the final rehearsals, the final dress.
Gotcha. So the way that it was presented 4 years ago and before was, say, and this would never happen, the UK got 100 from the jury and 100 from the televote. What would be announced was 200?
No, 12 points is the maximum.
So they didn't tabulate every... I thought you were talking about, like, every country's total jury votes.
No. The only votes that you would hear would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, and 12. And that's it. And that is a composition that is composed up until recently of a combined jury score and public televote.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Also assuming that the UK would get that many points.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Oh, bless. Bless their little hearts.
I was noting that.
Gotcha. So jury votes and that's completely weird to me.
Yeah.
That's
The thing is, like, it's weird now, but imagine when, you know, for a very long time, it was just jury vote. And then countries started bringing in the televote starting from around 1997.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which countries had this were able to sustain a mass televote like that. And then it went to entirely televote for a long time. They brought back the juries, I want to say, in 2008-ish, maybe a little bit before then.
It seems fairer to have both.
I think so, too. I think a lot of people disagree, especially...
A bicameral Eurovision legislation.
Exactly. With Jan Ulesand at the helm.
Yes. I love the cuts to him. Whenever the camera seems to cut to him, when they're like, and we're about to count the votes, it just cuts to him, and he's like, yes, Eurovision, I'm here.
Yeah, basically.
this is a man who, it seems like his job is to be the person who the camera cuts to before the votes, and it seems like he's always woefully unprepared and reluctant to do it every single
time.
It's
like, oh,
it's
God, this
great.
Again.
I was waiting, every time I watch Eurovision, I'm just always waiting for them to cut to him, and they say, Janu, do you have the votes? And he just sort of has this...
He snorts awake and goes, that was today?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
This look comes over his face and was like, oh, my God, I knew I forgot something. Norway? Yeah, Norway.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Considering he's Norwegian, that would probably rankle a couple of feathers.
Well,
I also like when they cut to him at this one, and maybe it was just because of the lighting and the staging, but whenever they cut to them, there's just like the dark and blue background and him and like flanked by six people on both sides, and it looked like we had just cut to like the hall of evil supervillains. I really loved that.
Oh yeah, yeah. When we were watching it on the show, every time they cut to that, I just said, meanwhile, at the
back at the EBU.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. There are own Legion of Doom, and I love them. So
it's definitely that from America's perspective.
Yeah.
Yes.
In terms of surprises this year.
Mm-hmm.
I want to start with what I think is the most pleasant surprise that I was delivered this time. And you said that this was a different experience for you because you knew immediately that North Macedonia was going to do very well. But I had no idea that North Macedonia was going to do A, that well in the jury vote, or B, that I would actually like it once I paid attention to it. Which sounds mean, but like once I was actually sitting down and watching it during the final... It was not a huge surprise for me that the jury loved it because I loved it, and that was a good performance.
Yeah, I mean she sang the heck out of it, and I feel like, especially for those of us who've been following for a while, North Macedonia or the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, like with the name change, it feels like it's a whole new nation. Macedonia, however you want to quantify it, had not qualified for a final since 2012. And had missed out sometimes by, you know, shortest little margins, and would have these great, great songs that would just be screwed up by their staging and just not make it through. So they had not made it to a final in a long, long time, which is an absolute shame. So I feel that when they changed the name, maybe it was some sort of a karmic... refreshing
renewed
or something.
A sense of self. Yeah, a new mission.
Maybe. I mean, and also this is Tamara's, technically her second time as a leading artist, but her fourth Eurovision altogether, because she'd done backing singing twice. She knew the lay of the land. And she had a really, you know, experienced team around her. Mm-hmm. So it just, it was the right song, the right staging at the right moment. She sang it beautifully, and
she seemed very confident.
She's a very well-established star, and you can tell.
I couldn't say that about the person I was most glad to have seen qualify, which was Malta. We talked about that last mm-hmm. week, but mm-hmm. she seemed a little bit not unprepared, but just
well, she just seemed green.
That's it. Like just
no, and then then the cameras changed, and then she was yellow, and then she was purple, yeah. and then she was blue.
I thought it was clever to start in a pineapple under the sea the way she did.
Very good.
It's Michaela.
Yeah. That was really fun, and I'm so glad it made it.
Yeah.
Because it was a good I would say it was a breath of fresh air, but it went on first. But it's the sort of song you want to lead with, I think. A lot of times, I think it's great to... If there's a song that... I hate to put it this way because it's hard to know what would have happened if things were in a different order. But if there's a song that's just really fun and colorful that isn't necessarily going to win,
mm-hmm.
you put that foot forward. And I think she was a great choice for that. I also think Spain would have been an amazing choice for
mm-hmm.
that. But they ended up being last instead, which is... Oh,
that's
too
tough. Because after a certain point, there's fatigue after a certain point as well.
There really is. I know I've found that with like the Eurovision party that you do.
Mm-hmm.
That
that we do. Let's be honest at this point.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know about that. But I was talking to another friend who was there, who was kind of going over the songs as the Eurovision week was progressing,
mm-hmm.
and she said something like, "I don't even remember Azerbaijan's song. This is great." And that's because it was right towards the end of the Eurovision party
mm-hmm.
when you're dying and the songs just sort of blend together,
mm-hmm.
which is
tough.
It's a tough spot to be in. And Spain should have done better no matter where it was, but they really got screwed by going last.
Well, they also, I think they also kind of shot themselves in the foot a little bit with their staging as well, which I thought was a little
IKEA,
it's too busy.
It seemed weird. It's been a long time since I've seen the old Nickelodeon series Finders Keepers, but I'm glad that they revived it for Eurovision
2020. That's a callback, man. This, my friend, is why we have you on the podcast, for the random ass callbacks.
Remember Finders Keepers?
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was kind of like that.
Wow.
Let's talk about another thing that America has to apologize and atone for at Eurovision this year, which is Madonna.
Oh, do we have to?
I think we need to talk about
what happened. We need to go through the trauma, as mm-hmm. I said last
yeah.
week.
I know, just to exercise our demons,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yes.
It doesn't go away until we talk about it.
Right.
She was joined by Quavo, which did not assuage the pain of what she subjected us to.
No.
It was rough.
It was very rough. I mean, at first... You know, seeing her go on stage and, you know, because we hadn't actually seen any of her rehearsals through all of this.
You hadn't?
No. Well, normally we do at least one round of the interval act rehearsals, you know, just to kind of get a feel for things. But it was lock and key with her. And, you know, the first opening bars and like, oh, she's singing live. Oh, she's singing live. Oh, God, she's singing live.
Yeah.
And it just,
is that what it's like to go to a Madonna concert? Like, oh
I mean,
boy.
I've just saved myself a lot of money then.
What were the two songs? She sang Like a Prayer.
Like
and
a Prayer
then...
and then a new, I think it was called Future. Future. That was her new song, which was just...
It was what it was, I guess, which was...
It was a thing.
Not what I wanted.
No, but the thing is, like, the show was already overrunning.
Mm-hmm.
We had a great interval act earlier on in the show with that sort of relay race of a song, the switch song where they had you know Eurovision champions and also ran
royalty
really
yes
you know so singing other people's songs. Like I would listen to Eleni Ferreira singing Dancing Lasha Tumbai all the freaking time. Like I want that on my workout playlist. It would actually get me to work out. And you know, Eric, you've been playing Mons' version of Fuego.
I have. I I love Fuego. I love Mons. I love Mons and Fuego. It's like peanut butter and chocolate. And as soon as he got into that, as soon as the chorus hit, and it was the very Monsy chorus, I was like, I need a studio version of this right now. And as it turns out...
And as it turns out, he had it ready.
Yes. Oh, yeah. he had released it that day. And so I could have it, you know, right now.
Well, thank you, Mons, for being so on the ball with that.
Hoping to get the rest. I think a Conchita version of Heroes that would be good as well. She already has a song called Heroes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is also quite good, but it is an entirely different
Heroes.
Different song.
Also, it was just really cool to see Conchita, how the artist has evolved. You know, when we first saw Conchita Wurst, it was full-on glam, you know, stunningly gorgeous drag queen with the beard. And now, you know, the artist, you know, I don't want to call them Conchita anymore. And I'm hesitant to use which pronouns, because I believe Conchita is actually preferring male pronouns at this point and moving forward. Mm-hmm. And has kind of sort of split personalities, I guess you could almost say, like kind of two different identities in the artist in one. Like there's Conchita, which is a little bit more feminized, and now he's been releasing more music as Wurst, which is a little bit more, still androgynous, but a lot more masculinized. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool to see just the evolution of an artist when it's more than just a singer. It's a character that Tom is playing with. Thomas Neuwirth is Conchita's real name. So it's just kind of cool to see, you know, how our acts grow and develop in the 5 years, really, since Conchita won.
Mm-hmm. I also, there was this moment where there were the four of them.
Mm-hmm.
It was like Conchita next to Mons, next to...
Eleni.
No.
And Verka. You mean Gali Atari.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. Gali was in the middle.
Not to be confused with Gali Hattari, her Icelandic cousin.
Gali,
really?
I'm sorry.
We'll get back.
Okay.
And then Gali Serhatari.
It must end.
Never. I'm going to... This is a bus I'm going to ride forever.
So, I just thought it was neat to have all of them together. And it was in this order. It was Conchita,
mm-hmm.
Mons, Gali, Eleni, and Verka.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a gay bell curve. Science.
Yeah.
You can't argue with science.
That's
I mean, it's a graph.
Oh, yeah.
It's good.
It was so good. It just, you see, if that were the only halftime show, the only interval act, I would have been okay with it. They had that little callback to Netta with her new track. That was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Banana, that was cute.
That's a fun one.
Yeah. Then they had Idan Rachel Project with Boy, which is the sort of more ethnic,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, that's a really big name in Israel. And I thought that was great, having a lot of that local identity. But then Madonna came on, and it's like, you have nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
It's like
she
when
did Kabbalah in the 2000s, and then I guess we can invite her back now.
But the thing is, supposedly it wasn't an EBU invitation. It was done
through... Was this like her agent, like, finessing things?
Supposedly, it was the work of a Canadian-Israeli billionaire who was like, let's get a big name to the show to get some more attention. And it's like, you don't need more attention. You're the Eurovision Song Contest. We have, I mean, I checked out the numbers. This year's Eurovision, the numbers that they just released for viewing figures, literally twice as much as the Super Bowl in the United States. Twice as much.
Yeah. We
don't need...
How many people tuned in for Madonna? Even a million? Probably not. Like Europe's.
Yeah. How many extra? Like, if anything,
gilding
the
lily.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like you didn't need mm-hmm. to do anything extra.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't need Justin Timberlake in whatever year that was.
But the thing is, that was 2016, and that was in Sweden. There was at least a connection because all of his biggest hits were Swedish written.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Who's that very prolific Swedish?
Are you talking about Max Martin?
That's it.
Yeah.
He's written, like, he has the most number ones, but outside of the Beatles on the U.S. charts.
Something like that. Yeah. Now, has Max Martin ever done anything?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
He must have written.
And he may have written some Melody Festivalen era stuff, but I would have to kind of look a little bit further into the catalog.
I would be curious to know. I guess it would not surprise me either way. He's... he's become such a big deal internationally, and I think a lot of those people just don't bother with Eurovision. But at the same time, he's Swedish, and it's a big thing there, so maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
maybe
it's
something.
It could absolutely, but I did a quick little. I'm on Google right now. I couldn't quite find anything immediately. People are referencing Justin Timberlake and Can't Stop the Feeling when I say Max Martin Eurovision.
Can't stop.
But the thing was, whether you like the song or not, it was an inescapable hit that year.
Yes, it was.
It was.
And that was the global premiere of that new song. And, it you know, was. Good for him.
I think Entertainment Weekly called that the worst song of the year.
Aww. That's sad.
You know what?
Oh,
if,
was it? Okay.
Subtract Madonna and Quavo from the interval act and copy paste that over whatever halftime show we had last year for the Super Bowl. I think I'd watch the Super Bowl then.
I can't even remember what it was. Was that
that was Maroon 5.
Oh, that was Maroon 5. Oh,
that was Maroon 5. Yes, put everyone to sleep. Yes, it was nice.
I would say I think
it was a nice little 25-minute nap.
Yeah. The Maroon 5 show was probably better than the Madonna show. And
I think so, too.
That is probably saying something. I also
Which
feel
is neither
like,
a compliment nor an insult for both of them.
Yeah. I also want to give a shout-out to the Shalva band, the disabled performers. That was the second semifinal.
That was the second semifinal.
I don't think we mentioned it on our semifinal recap from a couple weeks ago. But, yeah, that was great.
Yeah, they were excellent. And honestly, they were, I mean, you know the story behind them other than just, you know, who they are. But why?
Maybe a little. All right, but if you're listening at home and don't know.
So the Shalva band are a group. Well, one, there are eight members of the group. And you're only limited to six if you are a Eurovision act. They actually had competed on the national final to sing for Eurovision for this year, a program called Rising Star. And that was how Netta was chosen. That was how their singer for this year, Kobe, was chosen as well. However, most of them are more observant Jews. And if they had they would have had to chop two of their members because, like I said, there are eight of them. And you're only allowed six on stage for a competition act. And also, they would have had to perform on the Sabbath.
I heard about that was a big to-do with the specific scheduling for this year.
Right, exactly. So they're like, you know, we're so grateful for all the attention that we've, you know, had for our cause, and, you know, people are really loving us because they were front runners basically to win the whole thing for the Israeli ticket to the final. He's like, we have to step back. And people were kind of brokenhearted about it. And it's like, you know what? We'll give you an interval act slot on the second semifinal. So, you know, you could still have your moment. You don't have to compromise your religious beliefs. That's probably the best that we can do for you. And they sounded incredible. That's the lead singer. I don't know the lead singer's name. One of the two blind women who were singing.
They were extraordinary.
Incredible. Really, really great. So, I mean, more power to them, seriously. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Oh, gosh. What else do we want to talk about? Because there's so much. I mean, what do you tackle?
Well, there's a couple of things that, you know, were almost predictable for their recurringness in Eurovision's past, apparently. But I don't think we can get out of talking about Iceland. About the visitors from the north. I don't think it could be more fitting that the country in Europe, outside of Australia, more geographically disparate from Israel, would just swoop in and make a splash quite like Hattori.
Oh yeah.
Whew.
That was absolutely on the ground, they were the biggest story. And a lot of us thought that because of the momentum that they were getting from social media, from the work that they were doing. And like
they were doing such a good job of generating their own controversy, because I think they were even being chastised in the pre-Eurovision stuff for being too politically outspoken.
But the thing is, like, I think that whatever country they were singing in, they would have poked the bear.
Yes.
Like, they would have figured out a way to poke the bear. If we were in the United Kingdom, they would have poked the bear at Brexit. If we were in Russia, they would have poked the bear at one of a million things you could poke the bear at.
One of a million things, yes.
Quite literally poked the bear. If we were in, you know, a quote-unquote innocuous, but like a country that you wouldn't think to...
Slovakia. I'm sure they would have found something.
Well, I mean,
they would have just harped on that capitalism thing as hard as they have been.
Absolutely. They would have focused on capitalism. Even though Slovakia's not even in the contest anymore, but which is a shame. Slovakia, come back. Yeah, we miss you.
Yeah. We long for you.
One of us. One of us. Join us.
Longing for Slovakia.
Aww.
It's a sequel to whatever that San Marino book
Bridge
was. Immediately after we watched things, Eric and I went to a concert, but in the car we were watching when Hatori posted their Instagram video of having their Palestinian flags confiscated and all of the to-do that they knew that they would incur after doing something like this, and looking back and listening to the oohs and boos and hubbub in the arena like almost drowned out the announcement of the next television.
Well, I think they made a concerted effort to be like, next country, move on, come on, let's go.
They sure did.
In hindsight, I was shocked to see the flag thing when it happened, but after a while, I wasn't shocked at all because of course there was going to be something.
Of course
like
they
that.
Do.
honestly, thinking back, my thought process should have been, they haven't done anything crazy on camera yet.
They also, the thing is, they know how to play within the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, showing those flags were already overstepping a boundary. If they did something on stage during their performance, that would have been a massive overstep. And they were maintaining.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That
I mean,
when it mattered, when people were responding to it.
Mm-hmm.
They did it
when they knew for a fact it was going to be the last time they would be on screen.
That's mm-hmm. right. That's right.
Which, if you're going to do that, is the time to do it.
Absolutely.
Because you're not getting on screen again after you do it. But I feel like there's always got to be a little bit of geopolitical
intrigue
drama.
And something
it's,
like
it's
this.
It's part of the show.
I think this year more than others, though.
Well,
like,
yes,
we're not going to have this next year in the Netherlands. Let's be honest. We're not going to have the same amount of drama. Who's ticked off at the Dutch, really? Mm-hmm. The Belgians?
Do you want me to get started, Sam?
The freaky deaky.
We have 11 and a half months. I think if we start sowing anti-Dutch settlement now.
We're going to be so close to the world court, the Dutch delegation will answer for their crimes next year.
Well, I mean,
you know what you did with Suriname, and we haven't forgotten.
The two of you are heading over to the Netherlands just as tourists later on this year, are you not? So you can start sowing whatever seeds you want to sow.
We're going to distribute pamphlets.
Yeah.
I can't wait to be detained in scenic... let's Schiphol. Go with,
scenic Rotterdam.
In Wallonia, yeah.
That's Belgium. That's Belgium. Okay, now you're pissing the Belgians off.
Oh, no, what have I done? Elliot, I'm sorry.
No waffles for you.
Okay. Let's move from surprises, because there were a lot. And like we said, all of the crazy voting stuff this year we're probably going to cover next week when we devote our episode to the voting.
The voting.
The voting intricacies of Eurovision. But this year... this is something that I saw a lot of reaction on Instagram and Tumblr with, which is Italy's continued habit of being the bridesmaid and never the bride.
Yeah, and you know, part of me is kind of heartbroken because I would love to go to Italy for this. Who the hell knows where in Italy it would be?
Exactly. Because Italy's the Netherlands, they have a choice of four or five cities
easily.
That could, if they wanted to. So this could be Milan or Rome or Naples or wherever they really
wanted. I keep hearing Turin because of the Olympic.
That's true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot of,
Turin is fairly central also.
Yeah, it's up north and probably easy-ish to get to. But again, this is a question that we're going to have to kick forward to 2021 at least.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that Italy, I just find it funny that when Italy selected... Soldi to be the winner
this
of San Remo.
This was such a different song. This was a real unique one for this batch of Eurovision
and
songs.
And it won by the skin of its teeth in Italy. Like a lot of, Salvini, who's, sort of the Trump of Italy, I guess, was throwing shade at Mahmoud for not being Italian enough. which is BS.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Don't get too political.
You know exactly what he means by that.
Exactly. Yeah. But you know, the song won by the skin of its teeth on the in the San Remo Festival. A lot of people were sort of miffed that, you know, San Remo is even more complicated in its voting than Eurovision is, because they have a public vote, they have a jury vote, they have a press vote. Yeah, I know. It's confusing.
And then a council of elders that convenes and casts runes.
Yes.
Okay.
And they're all in Italian, so nobody has any idea what's going on.
We don't know.
No. It's un misterio. But so for Mahmoud to come from, he basically came from like the newcomers edition of San Remo. And that got him a ticket to Big San Remo.
Oh, sure.
And then he ended up winning the whole damn thing.
That's right. You told me he was the long shot of long shots.
He was. And then he ended up coming with this contemporary, awesome song that was honest, that was catchy. You know, we're never gonna not love that, you know?
Mm-hmm. I like the claps.
I know.
Ah, yes.
Clap, clap.
The whole audience was with him, too.
Oh, yeah.
They knew what was up.
Even last year, I mean, when was the last time that Italy wasn't in top 10?
Let me bring that up.
They were like fifth or sixth last year with a song that I didn't hate.
Right.
That was an interesting song that oh, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
2016?
Yeah, 2016, yeah, because that was A No Degree of Separation, which was a stunning song, incredible, Francesca Michelin. I'll have to play that for you when we're not here, but it was sweet and earnest without being too twee.
Yeah.
It was
unlike Denmark this year.
Yeah. Twee.
Get that big colossal IKEA chair.
Right, but yeah,
for your collection.
But since Italy returned to Eurovision in 2011, they have only finished out of the top 10 twice, in 2014 uh-huh. and in 2016. Every other time they've been into the top 10, they've had two silver medals, a bronze, a fifth place, sixth, seventh, and ninth.
Do you think it's only just a matter of time before they break through and get it in the next few years?
Or do you think so.
Do you think there's something that maybe they're missing?
I don't know.
I don't think they're missing. It really seems like they've got the hang of it.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, by average, they're doing fantastically well. I think any country would look at their record and go, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I don't know enough about the Italian delegation to say whether they look at the second place as, we dodged a bullet, we don't have to organize it next year.
Yeah.
Because there are countries that look at that and go, we've done as well as we could without having the onus on us next year. I think maybe when Bulgaria
like
came
Cyprus
in second.
Like Cyprus.
Yeah, like Cyprus or Bulgaria. And you know, I'm sure that when the time comes, they'll do an incredible job of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the last time that they hosted, it was chaos. They hosted it in 1991, and it was insane. It overran insanely. The host didn't speak enough English to be able to understand what was going on. And there was a tie for the win, and it was Mr. Neff, like nobody knew what the heck was going on. I'm using this Mr. Neff reference, and I'm realizing that none of you guys know what I'm talking about,
which is
heartbreaking.
Yes,
Mr. Neff was the Jan Ulasand of his day.
I assume. Okay,
so
that makes sense.
So the hosts, you know, when they realize, okay, there's a tie, and that the Swedes and the French have the same number of points, they're like, Mr. Neff. So that is. When there's a moment of confusion in the press center, every once in a while you'll hear somebody just pipe up, Mr. Neff, Mr. Neff.
Was that like something that they actually like shouted during? Someone running on fire, their hair in flames through the press center,
Mr.
shouting
Neff!
For Mr. Neff.
Yeah. So yeah, that's that. But yeah, I think Italy should absolutely be proud of where they are and hopefully where they're going. And if they keep continuing to use the San Remo Festival as their jumping off point,
mm-hmm.
I think it's only a matter of time.
Well, good. I believe in them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But keeping in mind, though, that they also tend to stay in pure Italian.
That I have no problem with it. There's a reason why opera composers wrote in it for 300 years. It's a beautiful language to sing in.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just ask Estonia last year when they sang in Italian. But I mean, since
it's working for them.
Yeah, every once in a while they'll kind of dabble in a little bit of English. You know, so 2011 they took a fully Italian song and they made it bilingual. Same with 2012. 2016 they took the Italian language song that won at San Remo and put in some English. And everything else has stayed in Italian, or in this year's case, Italian with a line or two in Arabic, which mm-hmm. was so cool to hear in Israel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he got no blowback from that. He got no BS from that, which is great. Because mm-hmm. Arabic is very widely spoken in Israel, no matter if you're on Israel, or the Palestinian Authority.
It's only helpful.
It's there. It's a part of the culture
for
there.
For sure.
Like, street signs are trilingual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Very cool.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Our other old friend from Eurovision,
hmm.
from Eurovision's past, Mr. Alexander Rybak, returned to delight our eyes yet
just
again.
Just for a moment. Just for a quick moment. Yeah, so he was delivering the votes for Norway. The jury votes, anyway, for Norway.
The mm-hmm. crowd went crazy.
Yeah, just he shows up. Him. He shows up on the picture-in-picture, and the crowd and just everyone. It's Alexander Rybak, you're the violin again! I loved it. It was great.
It's everybody's favorite Belarusian Norwegian elf man.
Yeah. He just shows up with that smile that I think they had to, like, I think that's the white correct that the camera people used in order to make sure that the color settings were right.
Well, but between that and Albania's smile, like Jonita from Albania, like those yeah. are... Thing. Seriously, girl. Like, wow, what a smile on her.
I don't think we can talk about that without mentioning Rylan from the UK.
Yes,
who
also.
Has the world's whitest teeth,
yes.
for the record.
Yes.
I was really happy for him because he's
a super fan.
He's
one of us.
He loves Eurovision. He's he seems fun.
Yeah, I mean, I met him for all of 10 seconds in Lisbon last year, and he's a nice guy. He's really mm-hmm. a cool guy. So, yeah. I mean, and for him to... He's the co-commentator for the BBC during their semi-final coverage, and then he throws to Graham Norton, for yeah. the full final.
That's his gig until he no longer wants it.
Basically,
imagine, yeah.
even though it kind of feels like he doesn't really want it.
Really?
Yeah, it's a paycheck. He likes it, but
fair
it's a paycheck.
Enough. Okay.
You can give it to me.
I know. We'll do it. Graham, have your people call our people. Mm-hmm. And by our people, I mean us.
Yeah.
It's at 12, the number 12 points USA on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Just let us know. We're flexible on money. Just let us know.
Can like, muster an accent if we really need to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Speak for yourself, buddy.
I was about to say
crikey there, like that's how
you know the British accent.
Yeah,
crikey.
Yeah.
Crikey.
You know how the Brits say crikey,
yeah.
Sam.
Maybe I'm not as well adjusted to the time zone as I thought I was. Excuse
yes.
me.
I was also really pleased to see a lot of weird and fun things in the jury vote cutaways.
Hmm.
We got to see who was the artist from Slovenia last year.
Leah Sirk.
Yeah,
yeah,
she presented the jury votes there.
Of course.
And then when we cut to Russia, whatever that weird Mozart playing the piano, absolutely loved it.
Okay.
This is the Eurovision pageantry I'm here for.
Well, it should be noticed there is a context step. So the
okay.
kid's name is Ivan Besenov. He was actually, so when we say Eurovision, we think of the Eurovision Song Contest. There are actually a whole bunch of related festivals
mm-hmm.
under the Eurovision umbrella. So there's Junior Eurovision.
Yeah, which I know.
There's Eurovision Choir of the Year, which is a new thing that's going to be in, I think, in Scotland later this year.
Is there like Pitch Perfect, but Eurovision?
Basically. Basically. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
So
Ben Platt.
So Ivan Besenov is the winner of the 2018 contest of the Eurovision Young Musicians competition.
Okay.
So it's classical music, instrumental, and he won it for Russia last year. So that's who he was and why he was doing what he was doing.
I just imagine if Franz Liszt had been alive today, he would have done exactly what he did.
Oh, yes.
Just
flourish.
I love the melodramatic flourish at the top of the piano, and then he just turns and goes, Russia's 12 points, go to.
Dun, dun, dun. And then we had Romania, Ilinka, who was everybody's favorite little yodeler. You know, good for her. Electric Fields, who were second in the Australian national final.
That was a nice touch.
Thrilled to see them.
I love when there's a connection to a previous year or something like that. That's a good tradition that we should try to continue to have.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Absolutely agree. Because, I mean, this is a family. This is a traveling circus, but we see the same faces year after year. And it's people who we know and we love. And we, you know, it's like the way that you reacted to Alexander Rybak is the way that I reacted to Electric Fields. And
that's about how I reacted to Leia Sirk.
Yeah.
I was really excited to see her.
You know, Laura,
she was great.
You know, Minnesota connection this year, Laura Rizzotto reading out the list for Latvia.
Yes.
She was in there as well.
Lovely. And also very good to see her doing well because she was actually in some sort of a car accident earlier this year. And she's recovering well, but, you know. Good to see her, you know, up and about and being the face of Latvia. And what a lovely face it is. The girl is gorgeous. But yeah, it's a crazy traveling circus. And off we go to the Netherlands next year, you know, city to be determined.
Mm-hmm.
But
I suppose there was a winner.
There was a winner.
Kind of forgot about that.
I know, right?
There was a winner visited by an
There was Madonna, and then I just sort of passed out.
Well, once the dust settled, the Dutch had their first win since 1975, which is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And off we go to, if I were to place a bet now, not that I have much money to bet on, I would say we're heading probably to Rotterdam.
Okay.
So, second city.
Mm-hmm.
They've never hosted it before. It'll be great. Big. Lots of hotels.
It's a huge.
It's a big city. It's a really, really big city.
When can get to it?
Yeah, but they've got a venue big enough to do it called the Ahoy Arena, which I just think is fun.
Ahoy! It's the arena. No. Please come, come host Eurovision. That's good.
Yeah,
that's it. That's my joke. That's it. That's it.
So going into this year, we started doing some Eurovision pieces for KMSU radio station in Mankato, which is a couple hours outside of the Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm.
And it just started ramping up other Eurovision interest type stuff, doing this podcast and so on. And what I have been telling myself, hopefully and with some amount of conviction, is that 2020 is going to be the year that I go. That this is going to be my first time actually experiencing it. Like right there and be a part of it and all that. But there was always just sort of that little bit of doubt that's just like, okay, well, are you going to have the time? Are you going to have the money? Are you going to do whatever? Is it going to be a country that is going to be friendly to, not like friendly to Americans, but just like friendly as a first Eurovision experience? Because I feel like Tel Aviv seems gorgeous. Maybe not the first one to go to.
That's reasonable.
Or flying to sunny Georgia might not be the most conducive.
Yeah.
I want to go to Georgia so freaking badly. You have no idea.
Good luck, Georgia. Net it next year.
Yeah, bring it.
We'll
bring
see.
It.
Yeah. We believe in you, quote unquote. And when the Netherlands won, we've talked quite a bit about how we're not really sold on what made the Netherlands song that great. And it was fine. The performance was outstanding. The song is solid.
Mm-hmm.
Still doesn't quite feel like a winner to me personally. But when they won, it dawned on me that how good that win is for me. No, for real. Because like this is a place that we'd mentioned. We're going to the Netherlands just for funsies in a few months.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be a place that I have been to before,
mm-hmm.
which seems like a good way to do it.
Yeah.
It is a place we can get to directly.
Minneapolis is wonderful.
Especially on the airline, for which I have a lot of miles. Also nice. And even in addition to that, compared to a lot of places we could have gone, it is fairly inexpensive.
Yep.
So when that dawned on me and I just sort of realized like
this could happen.
This is going to happen. This is it. This is legit. We'll be able to make this work.
Mm-hmm.
I was so happy.
Aww.
I was so excited.
Because I had a bit of a feeling of deja vu. Like when the Netherlands won, it felt a lot like when Germany won in 2010. And it's like, okay, for the first time, it's going to be in a place that I can make it to. It's, you know, a place that I can get to relatively easily,
mm-hmm.
A place where I don't really speak much German, but I could get by. It's not a crazy expensive location. It's a place that I'd been to briefly before, so I knew that, you know, logistically it could happen. And seeing you go through that process just makes me feel really, really excited that I get to watch you do what I've done, because this will be my 10th coming up.
It's going to be great.
And,
I've talked about going for years. There was definitely a point where I was convinced that Je Cherche was going to win.
Mm.
That was 2016.
Belgium?
No, France.
That was France?
Yeah.
France 2016.
It's a really nice, fun song. And it ended up doing fine, but it didn't win. And I remember thinking, if France wins, I'm going to go. And then they didn't. And then for one reason or another, there's just never been a year where it's like, okay, that would be good. And some of it was like, well,
it was in Ukraine.
It was in Ukraine or it was in Israel. And there just wasn't, it just wasn't feasible. But I really wanted 2020 to be the year. And now I can say it is the year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. I'm super pumped. I am thankful to the Netherlands and to Europe for being so into it. They really did me a solid. That's all I'm saying.
Thanks, Europe.
Yeah.
Yay.
So, guys, should we wrap this up? I think that we've got a lot to talk about. For you know, for our next podcast, we want to talk about the craziness of voting,
The way voting works, and the nutso voting that happened
exactly,
this last year.
Exactly. Because yes. I mean, Danny, this was your first. Like any sort of parting thoughts as we say kind of goodbye to this episode and to Eurovision 2019, like any sort of summary thoughts, or should we just say F it and roll on to the next conversation?
It was good. See ya, suckers. That's it. I didn't mean that. I love
that's
you,
all.
Eurovision. Yeah. It was I didn't mean what I said. Come back.
Yeah.
Never
well, anyway, yeah,
until next time, I am Eric.
I'm Samantha.
I'm Danny.
And America,
stop listening now.